Hello and welcome, dear listeners. Welcome to another Odd Job Pod, the podcast which is all about everything James Bond and everything surrounding it, which I think you'll be very interested in this week. I feel a bit like Alfred Hitchcock sitting in his sort of chair doing Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Well, have you been in profile, like silhouetted?
I'd like to think so.
Gary Andrews Presents.
Yes.
Good evening.
I mean, to be honest, I think this is something the entire world needs to see.
Couldn't be more.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So please petition Netflix to get that created, and also
that'd be a spin-off of the Odd Job Pod, isn't it?
Absolutely. And funnily enough, you should talk about spin-offs, Graham. Yeah, this is a shock. But actually, that was my chosen topic for this Odd Job podcast,
which
is spin-offs. I should probably at this stage introduce my two cohorts in podding. Graham Sibley.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And coincidentally enough, spin-offs as the topic of conversation. Because we kind of thought, well, James Bond has had many opportunities for spin-offs down the years. It has had a few spin-offs. You can look to potentially towards the comic books that are done, you can look towards the unofficial novels that are done, and you can look towards the cartoon series of James Bond Jr., which I'm sure people of a certain age will look back on and go, what? But other than that, there haven't really been too much. And when you think certainly of, for example, how Marvel have approached their cinematic universe and expanded out even minor characters into long Netflix series, which have some of which have been quite entertaining, Bond is probably got a very rich back catalogue. So the question that I'm asking everybody to start off with, and I'll turn to Terry first, is if you were going to start spinning off characters or spinning off series for Bond, where would you start? Who would you look at?
Well, I've got a few ideas, but I probably the first guy that immediately sprung to my mind was Kerim Bey from Russia with Love.
Kerim Bey,
yeah. Who I thought was a fantastic character, brilliant actor, and had a really interesting backstory. He was a circus performer, wasn't he? He was a muscle man.
Yeah.
And then it somehow ended up becoming, you know, head of section for MI5. And I would love to be able to examine that backstory. Maybe not as a series, although, you know, in fairness, a 10-part Netflix series might be quite interesting. So, but either that or a one-off movie or something like that. An adventure, perhaps set in the Second World War, because From Russia with Love is like 60s. Kerim Bey is a bit older than Bond, I think.
That sort of build up to the Cold War, build up early days Cold War.
Yeah.
Especially in an area that you wouldn't necessarily associate with the Cold War.
And you could sort of like see this coalescence of him getting involved in some kind of, you know, foiling some kind of Nazi plot, perhaps being recruited by M into the Secret Service, you know, and his gypsy friends and how all that goes down. I think that would make for a fascinating, you know, miniseries or a movie, and I would watch the hell out of that.
And as we well know as well, that without wanting to be too flippant about that era, that Nazis are in entirely rich territory when it comes to the cinematic world, and generally can be relied on to be quite entertaining. When you look at Indiana Jones, for example, obviously mind that richly, and right the way through to Captain America
Captain America movie as well, absolutely, yeah.
It's interesting you've gone that way, because I think that going period is a really rich seem to mine with Bond, and I think that's what a lot of the spin-offs that we've already seen that have been produced, Charlie Higson's stuff is spun off the
Fleming era,
era, isn't it? And so it's pre-war, and so your spin-off would be just slightly post-war, and that's what we're seeing a lot more in drama now anyway, with they're not afraid to go back. Because it's easier to do now. It's easier to do period stuff.
Yeah. And audiences are sophisticated enough now to be understand that, you know, there's different universes, there's different ways of perceiving things.
Yeah. And
so they're quite
and different ways of telling stories.
Yeah. So the, you know, the new Justice League film has the Flash in it, and yet there's also a TV show of the Flash, and they're not the same character, but they are the same character. But audiences are perfectly capable of making the distinction.
Yeah.
And I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case. In the James Bond extended universe.
That's very DC though, isn't it, really? Like having different realities. It introducing that to a franchise can be difficult, can be jarring. I mean, like, you end up with on our sister podcast about Star Trek, we know about the fact that there is canon and there's side canon.
Yeah.
Isn't there? So Would your Karen Bay spin-off be side canon, or would it be total canon?
I would classify it as side canon.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think all of this would be side canon, but I wouldn't allow myself to become worked up about this. I would describe it. The DC universe is the DC extended universe, which I think allows for multiverses and side canon and whatnot. And DC is comfortable with multiverses, as anybody who knows their comics know. DC is very comfortable with multiverses.
I would like to ask who would be comfortable with Pierce Brosnan's side canon.
See, if anyone had a side canon, it would be Pierce.
That is a question that only you would ask. and unfortunately, it's only a question that you can answer. I suspect the answer is Gary Andrews.
Oh, well, not even that. Given Pierce Brosnan's history with... it raises all sorts of questions. Anyway, sorry.
Moving on, he says.
Moving swiftly on.
Realising the hole he's dug into.
He is underneath the Istanbul sewers right now.
Shaking off those frantically.
We've caught you looking up a woman's skirt with a periscope, haven't we? Dirty old man.
I'd like to think it's more just Lazenby with the porno mag.
You must have an idea.
Come on, okay. Gary, come up with your idea.
So you're looking for my spin?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to a much later era, and actually, I'm being a little bit greedy here, because I'm potentially going over a couple of films.
Yeah.
And in an era where actually I think is really rich, and obviously we've seen very much in recent years the idea of the anti-hero or the villain becoming focus. And actually I think there's two very fascinating films from this kind of era, where the villains actually I think have some potentially quite fascinating backstories, or you could do some very interesting stuff with the way the film's constructed. And that's the Dalton era, and the villains in the Dalton era.
Oh, right.
So I think Fran Sanchez is a brilliant villain, and actually there's, you know, we've seen with Breaking Bad, obviously that would probably be the thing you'd most compare this to, but you look how he's kind of the drug empire he's built up actually probably lends itself incredibly nicely to how he could have come up and risen up and built this whole empire. And you've got some great characters throughout as well that could be incorporated into it, the likes of kind of Hela and Joe and etc. throughout it, from License to Kill. And I think actually you've got certainly the 80s are sort of quite in vogue as well, and you've got a potential tinge you could put to that in terms of
80s drug era, right? That's got Netflix download all over.
Absolutely.
It
tell the story of how he won Pinafore over, couldn't he? It was the guy who betrayed Leiter in Living Daylight. When he goes, $10 million.
That's what you build up
of a
to.
A chunk of dough, but you could tell that story about how you could have this two stories running along. You'd have Sanchez's rise and then the rise of Pinafore.
You could have those in the first series. Those could be utter enemies, couldn't they? They could be like those are the two characters.
Yeah,
that
and then
go,
maybe some one event brings them together and they work together. Yeah. Albeit briefly, but in fact that they form a bond, and then
and you can actually work out, like, by the time you get to see the film, you think no this isn't the character at all, he has been sold out by everyone.
It allows you to examine the tragedy of how he got there, and then when you watch it you go, oh, this is really sad, and it's really awful the way that, you know, yeah, James Bond just like killed him. Yeah,
it's no wonder if he's lighter than Charles, because lighter fucking deserves it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, this,
if lighter is a bad guy for 3 seasons, yeah, then you suddenly think, yes, go on, beat him to the fucking
I'm
shark.
Guessing you have both watched the hell out of this.
That was a great idea about, like, I mean, just in Quantum of Solace, you know, they portray the CIA as being bad guys, but lighter is the kind of, shall we say, way of light within them. But the idea of lighter actually being this sort of like devious CIA bloke who manipulates.
Who being people, what the CIA actually were throughout the whole.
And then Bond drops in from time to time to say, you know, and only sees the best side of it, the kindest side. Whereas guys like Killifer realise what kind of a man he is, and actually the idea of selling him up the river for $10 million is not actually that much of a stretch.
Yeah.
Then you've got yourself an idea.
That's a really good
idea. I'd subscribe to that.
Jeez, right, okay.
And then I was also going to say, because I mean, I think we've pretty much sold on that one.
Copyright Terry DeFell.
You can see where I'm going on this, because I mean, License to Kill is one of my favourite Bond films, and it has a kind of richness to it. But then also, you could equally do the same for me with The Living Daylights, because you've got two villains who are perhaps slightly underwritten, but have equally fascinating stuff. Whittaker, is, you know, actually, there's a really fascinating kind of backstory.
Well, it's
there.
Something you don't normally see in Bond films, that interplay. With the double agent, triple agent, whatever you want to call them, but people who are suddenly like shipping over from one side to the other,
and you've got an entire Russian plot, Russian spy double agent plot that you set in the kind of, you know, ending of the Cold War era. Which, oh my god, when you look at the characters, I think the Russian characters are probably one of the strongest characters in The Living Daylights. You've got a potentially fantastic.
You've got a nice ensemble there, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've got Pushkin as well.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, General Gogol as well is another character, because he turns up at the end of Living Daylights. He was a guy I thought of that would be quite interesting to do sort of like a one off movie about General Gogol, because he turns up in quite a few of those movies of that era. And it would. I think if you had a kind of, you know, end of Cold War era story, you know, but leading with Koskov.
I think a very much a Russian based Cold War, so because going from the Dalton era right through the Brosnan era, it's that whole sort of thing about Russia, about how it's portrayed there. But you could have things that are going on in the background that go through the whole lot of them. And I'm not talking about Robbie Coltrane's character, which was a bit... but an interesting character in itself.
His character was much better in GoldenEye. It was much more believable.
Yes, yeah. By the time it rolled around again...
Yeah, for It's Not Enough, it was more like a carry-on character, to be honest with you. But but in GoldenEye, it was...
Carry-on Glazunov.
Yes, quite so.
I mean, you could almost take that. There's actually a potential. Thinking about it, it's not something that I'd consider because I was very much focused on the Dalton era. But you could potentially take it and have a really good kind of Russian side running right back to, say, Octopussy, with Stephen Burkoff's fantastic character,
General Orlov.
General Orlov, taking it right through from Orlov through to the Brosnan era.
You watch all of those films, suddenly the whole the end of the Cold War suddenly makes sense, doesn't it, really? It all just leads one into the other.
Again, you tie that a little bit into the real world, and you've got some brilliant characters in all those three kind of Bond eras. But to be able to then go back and tie the Russians together into a brilliant piece of kind of like period spying.
A long running TV show along the lines of Dynasty.
I was always thinking kind of like Hannibal, where you kind of working through the books from a TV series, and that was the idea of Hannibal. But do it with the kind of Russian generals from late Moore through to early Brosnan.
What you're actually talking about there is actually the Americans, but on a far slicker, like production sort of value. But because the Americans is brilliant. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast.
You may have done.
I may have done, but it is
worth saying again.
Yeah, it is brilliant. but it's totally non-Bond. It's like, but if it was Bond, if there was a Bond version of the Americans, yeah, then that would be brilliant.
So would you, if you were studio executives, would you buy my two pictures for those two shows?
Yeah, I'd certainly.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
And now after both of your pitches, I'm now pretty weak now.
we're at the stage where we're calling in the coffee and like, Janice, I've got my calls. You know, who's next? Oh, it's Sibley. Okay, give him five.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Talk fast, Sibley.
Oh, talk fast. Okay. Right. Now, I was thinking, now I could, because I thought, all right, what have I got? I'm going to go for a 13 episode Netflix download, straight download. I think these people can cope with that. And I thought, right, okay, well, which era am I going to go for? And I thought, I could just go for Q Branch, something like that. Go for the geeks. Get them in a lot, like new gadgets every week, you know, just like coming up with something, or fishing out their existing gadgets out of some river in Italy.
I almost see that as being like a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It is, exactly,
show, yeah.
exactly that. But you think, well, no, I can do better than this. And then I thought, well, so what are you going to do? You're going to spin off other characters. The trouble with spin-offs is, what sort of spin-off are you going to be? Are you going to be a Frasier? Or are you going to be a Joey?
I've been waiting all fucking night to drop that gag in. All night.
Yes, exactly. And I got to do it.
And you got to do it. You did. Yeah.
But it's true, though, isn't it?
I'll be sure to inject some of the sound of tumbleweed.
Yeah. But the spin-offs are always going to be like equated as that, aren't they? They're going to say, well, you know, people are always going to be saying, well, it either stands on its own, or it's... Well, it's not what it was before, was it, really? And so you've got to be able to say, well, okay, well, how does the spin-off work? Does it work as the fact that this is the continuation of something that the original cast didn't want to do anymore? Or is it, this is something that crosses over slightly into the universe and is actually exists in its own right? I think what you should do for a spin-off is actually come up with an idea that actually in the films seems like a completely incongruous idea. Look, why on earth are these characters just being like presented to us? Mm. There is no reason for them to be here. So what I'm going to do is, you know the two women in Moonraker?
Which two women?
The Countessa and the other woman there. When Bond's first introduced to Drax.
I do know. Yeah. Those two women.
Yeah. Yeah, the ones who were actually in the book as well, aren't they?
I think they are. Yeah. What, you mean Fleming's book? Or...
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And they said, my friend's here, the Countess. And then they go. And there's no reason for them to be there at all, is it?
Yeah.
There's no reason for them to be there. It's just an additional way of putting in two very attractive young ladies into the film.
Mm. There's two more that turn up a bit later.
They are, yes.
During the shooting, the clay pigeon shooting. Yeah.
You know what I have in my mind from what you pitched with that? It's kind of like a very strange Bond version of taking
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Yes, exactly.
You had exactly.
But that's what I think. These two are just a couple of freeloaders who have just given themselves some some really fancy titles, and they're actually just like going around Europe rinsing supervillains of all of their money and living the lifestyle of
get to live in a sexy pad in Paris.
Yeah, and basically get to shag like international spies and like live this life, and the whole thing about it is the fact that the whole lifestyle is a complete lie. And that they go around like doing this stuff, and shit's going on, and people are getting killed, and they're like, but they're not, obviously. But
drifting through the whole thing.
Yes. That's why I think so. It's got BBC Three written all over it, I know. But, you know, I think this is my pitch.
Everyone knows which channel you're pitching.
I would actually... Hey, but then again, I know which one of ours is more likely to get off the ground.
Yeah, well, your one. Sizzling chicks. So, yeah.
I was actually thinking probably potentially more e-entertainment.
Hey, I'm not proud.
Like a reality show.
Oh my god, no, it could be, couldn't it? Really? Let's face it.
I, to be fair, somebody had having gone. Sibley's got 5 minutes. I'm now going. Tell me more. I'm seeing potential dollar signs there.
Cha-ching.
I think this one is basically one that you can you know, you can probably, as you're picturing that and you're seeing the studio executive change, their eyes change all the way through. You're probably mentally starting to plan out your own pool party to celebrate.
Well, the other idea I had was actually going back to Live and Let Die and doing a 70s piece, because I thought what would actually really work on Netflix or Sky Atlantic, I think, in the UK, would go do a 70s piece, Live and Let Die, Harlem, and that whole setup that Mr. Big had there, because, you know, it's still there. You know, let's face it, like they didn't blow it up, did they? That's all those people that are driving around there. Nothing actually gets resolved in Harlem. So
no, that's true.
That whole story goes on. I love the idea of that whole sort of era of the whole Black Power thing and the whole conspiracy theories of subversion and money coming in from Russia and things like that and China to create this thing, but really it's just the two sides.
After Mr. Big sort of thing.
Yeah.
After
the power struggle there.
And then what happens after?
Yeah.
So a bit like a kind of a Godfather, yeah. Well, any gangster movie that you want to think of.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a great
And of course idea, set in the 70s, which is so screen friendly as well.
Yep, an opportunity to get some Wild Wild Guitar out.
Yeah.
Tremendous fun to be
here. Oh, yeah. The soundtrack of that would be amazing.
To be honest, that's the first thing I started. If I looked like I was drifting off there, I was genuinely mentally composing the soundtrack in my head.
With George Martin going on in your head at the time. Yeah. I think your Rosencrantz and Guildenstern idea is quite an interesting one. Taking minor characters.
Yeah.
Just sort of, you know, not even minor characters.
Just non-characters.
Textures, basically. Yeah. And looking at it from their point of view, looking at the situation from their point of view. But watching a Bond adventure play out, any Bond adventure that you can think of, like, I don't know, the final stages of You Only Live Twice, maybe. From the point of view of a henchman, certainly a henchman story, which was alluded to a bit in Tick, obligatory Austin Powers mention. Austin Powers,
yeah.
National Man of Mystery,
yeah.
Where they shifted the emphasis briefly over to the henchman and to the guard and put a human face on it. It's fantastic.
So, Clary, obviously, we've kind of both pitched really a couple there, and you've only had one with Karen
too. Yeah, and I
always do, don't I?
Yeah,
so.
And I managed to sneak in too, given that I covered both Dalton films, which I think are massively rich territory.
Mm.
So go on. I think it's only fair we allow you another potential spin.
Well, that's very kind of you. I mean, the one that immediately springs to mind is Plenty O'Toole from Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh,
yes.
Now that's a fascinating.
Named after her father, no?
No doubt. Yeah, I was thinking that this would probably make for an amusing 1970s style confessions movie. You know, maybe even dig up Robin Asquith.
Another period piece.
Yes, another period piece, and you know, making it a kind of you know confessions of a slot jockey or something like that. And just a one-off, nothing. A bit of fun, lots of tits and arse. Nothing more than that. And I think that would be a fine movie. I found out that those Confessions movies were written by Christopher Wood, who wrote the screenplay for Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker.
Well, that explains a lot.
I reckon a TV show just based in the White House in Vegas would just would well would be a run anyway. You get you get a shady tree there, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember a TV show called Hotel? It had Josh Brolin in the 1980s. It wasn't set in Vegas, but it was
no, right, yeah, yeah.
But it was sort of.
Well,
like
there was a TV show with I can't remember who it was called Vegas. In
Dan
the
Tanner.
Dan Tanner, yeah. Yes.
And then there was another one called Vegas some years later, which I think
that was
had James
yeah.
Caan in it. But I mean,
it was. It did have James Caan in it. Yes.
Yeah. So that could work. But certainly, I think that there, also it's quite good. It's Lana Wood, isn't it, who plays Plenty of
yeah, Natalie's sister.
Yeah,
Natalie, yes.
Yeah. It's quite good because then you know your strapline would be you know the film with plenty of wood.
Somehow very appropriate yeah, for that film that it spun out from. And tumbleweed.
See, tumbleweed, it rolls around in every town, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Have you got any more notes?
I've taken a few, actually.
I've got to take a few. I'll tell you what. How about...
I just toss a few out there.
Yeah, you know, no, I'm going to toss one out there. How about a series? I think there has often been the idea of in inverted commas, Jane Bond. And the idea of Bond's daughter. And I think that what you could do is Sylvia Trench's daughter. And not include Bond there, but just have the
Sylvia Trench is quite the worst name for character.
I know exactly. Yeah.
It's just pure misogyny.
I know exactly. Sylvia but you can Trench. Imagine what she's going to be like in 25 years time, when like she's still down at the casinos, still like sipping on the martinis. I'm thinking of Sylvia Trench's daughter of just being some kind of either someone who is trying to live a good life while her mother is just like someone who goes to casinos and shags international spies still in her 50s and like tries to live a good life but can't help but falling into the fact that her aging father James Bond wants to get in touch with her and is going through some kind of crisis
or he turns up and he's in trouble.
Yeah, basically he's now 70 years old
yeah,
and like
yeah,
and like
yeah, alright yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 turns up and he's on the road
yeah
and he's incapable of dealing
it's got a sitcom now yeah. Isn't it isn't
yeah. Can I suggest
so
somebody
just like
for
The Rock basically.
Yes, almost. Yes, almost exactly like The Rock. Yeah, without Nicolas Cage.
I was actually going to suggest Bill Nye for James Bond at that stage.
Yeah, I know. I think, Nye, I think that works. I think that works really
Bill Nye
well.
Bill Nye narrates a recent audiobook version of Moonraker. To great effect, I have to say.
So, if Bill Nye is Bond, who are we getting in a Sylvia Trench? We're going to get someone in a 50s, 60s.
Well, she's such a despicable, hopeless character that I don't want to insult any glorious female actors by women actors. By,
not really. I mean, let's face
let's
it.
Say
I mean,
Helen Mirren.
A lot of. I don't think like Julie Walters, maybe.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who can actually think of. Someone who can act something like, I made a lot of mistakes when I was younger. But I'm doing well now.
Well, I don't know about the actress who plays Sylvia Trench. Is she. She's still with us.
I wouldn't.
She probably would be very old if she was. Maybe not quite.
She probably hasn't worked for a while.
Mm. Mm.
But someone could easily do it.
Yeah.
And so you can have that. And yes, it's got comedy value there, especially with the fact that, yeah, see, this is the way comedy ideas come up, you see. Like, people sit around the table.
Actually, all we're doing is, listeners, is brainstorming for ideas for future creative projects, which are going to subtly alter the names.
any coincidence to events, real or fictional?
Would you like to see an M series?
See, I was wondering that because this was one of the things that I had potentially in my mind was M is a fascinating character, and actually all of the M's, Bernard Lee's M, Judy Dench's M, and even Mallory, Ray Fiennes' M, they all appeared that they would have some very, very interesting backstories. And out of all of them, I think, well, they've all... you could probably pick any one of them, but I think Judi Dench's M in particular would be a fascinating character to delve into that backstory.
Yeah, I'd like the idea of doing a Judi Dench's M, which is closer to the kind of Le Carré kind of spy genre. And again, not wishing to retread old ground, but I think the Bernard Lee M backstory would be, again, wartime, the Second World War. And, you know, maybe him as a kind of equivalent to a 00 within the Second World War. I think that both of those stories have got some serious mileage.
Do you know what you've just done, though?
No.
You've just given us our next podcast. Spy crossovers. What spy films or spy genres could Bond cross over into?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, no, I'm very much in favour of talking about that.
Yeah, that's an hour. Easy conversation, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think the M idea is a good idea. I think I think that's a period piece. It's interesting with the Judi Dench's M. I think that's an 80s thing. That whole sort of last decade of the Cold War thing, when it starts getting really Deutschland 83 Americans again,
the time. The potential you have with them as well, quite particular for Judi Dench's M. The interesting thing that you could do with Judi Dench's M is, if you are doing that kind of whole backstory, actually there's a real potential to bring Silver in as a recurring character.
Oh, God,
through
yes.
Be another character with a fascinating backstory, because that left so many questions unanswered in Skyfall.
Yeah, one movie or a series set in Hong Kong with Silver.
You could do so much in there in terms of how M and Silver came.
If you bring the original characters from other films from Hong Kong as well, bring those into it, have the whole sort of Hong Kong thing going on.
Definitely. If you set, yeah, if you, in the build up for 97, to 97, when the UK surrendered, for want of a better word, Hong Kong to the Chinese.
No, I think there's so much rich potential there, because I'm sure probably when I watch Skyfall, even when I rewatch it, you were really dying to know exactly what the catalyst for setting Silver off on the path that he was. And
I have just thought of an idea for Q.
Oh, come on then.
Yeah. Q augments the Barbary apes of Gibraltar's intelligence so that they work underground against the Spanish.
Now you've gone completely sci-fi, yeah. I mean, sci-fi channel.
Well, yeah, that's happened to the right.
You know your market.
Yeah. I'm just tapping into the zeitgeist. Okay, that wasn't such a good idea.
Hey, there's no bad ideas at this table.
I think that was it. Have we got
so come
more?
On, open up your book and see what else you.
I have one while Terry looks for his.
Yeah, yes. Come on then. Yeah, yeah.
So. Now, there's one of two ways you could go with this. You could go with sort of, again, a slightly more kind of period piece, or you could go more down the Death in Paradise route by essentially opening up Dr. No's Island for an entire ongoing series set.
Island of Dr. No.
Just entirely around that area.
That's a marvellous idea.
And yeah, you have many potential value to do. Basically, you could either do pre or post.
See, I like the idea that the island of Dr. No is also the same island that Scaramanga had his base on, and is also the same island that Drax launched all six of his space shuttles from.
You could even do a spin-off of having basically a supervillain
island. It's like everyone's got these little sections of their island.
This is a marvellous idea. Crab Key is such a wonderful name.
Crab Key is a fabulous name for a TV show. Yeah.
Especially some kind of Heart of Darkness kind of sort of like, you know, story, you know, chasing the dragon, so to speak. I would definitely
somewhere where people go to follow their supervillain dreams.
Yeah.
It's like the Hollywood of supervillainry. Yeah. You go there and you go there with big ideas, and it's gonna eat you up. Crab King will eat you up.
No one will develop it. No one will go near it. The only people that are attracted to it are the villainous.
Yeah.
Who go there for sanctuary.
Yeah.
And indeed to hatch evil schemes.
Yeah.
And recruit from there. So yeah, sort of like supervillain's paradise. And then maybe one.
Or what seems to be a supervillain's paradise.
Yes.
But when he's like every other like.
Yeah, that's a strong idea, isn't it?
Oh god, that's a strong idea.
Yeah. Because then you could turn it into a serial anthology, and then you could do multiple series. Change your cast every series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All these ideas are free, by the way, Barbara. Michael, they're all free.
Yeah.
We just want free tickets. That's all. Maybe some girls.
And if we don't, we'll just go and make our own series with blackjack and hookers.
We'll just do it ourselves. Yeah. Yeah.
James Bond with hookers and blackjack. That's the idea. There's
our original.
Yeah. Our original.
Yeah. I did think about maybe a kind of. I thought about maybe a Jaws as well.
What? Pre him becoming good or post him? Like what actually happens when he lands to Earth?
I think that would be boring.
Yeah, it would be dull.
Maybe the making of Jaws. How did he get those gnashes?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be quite cool.
When he starts off at 5'6".
It's just a bit dangerous.
And all the drugs he took.
He fell into a stretching machine as a boy. Emerged as a 7-foot-year-old giant.
I was actually worried that might come a bit like Wolverine Origins. Is the danger with
that? I hadn't considered that. You're absolutely right. That is atrocious.
What do you mean he had real teeth beforehand?
No one. I also had an idea about Vijay Amritraj going undercover in the tennis pro circuit looking for a Russian spy.
Do you know what? That's what notebooks are made for,
that's
isn't
what,
it?
That is what notebooks are. And that's what this one is made for.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'm pretty much dead. I just have here, also next to You Only Live Twice, Tanaka.
That's all I've got. You've also got a picture of a stick figure that is obviously like you, with carrying bundles of cash.
I'm surprised you can see it from here.
Yeah. I notice these things.
Yeah.
So I actually had one.
And I wanted to do one about Largo, how he got his iPad.
I think all these ideas can be explored in episodes of better shows that we've already discussed.
You could
discuss
always do kind of like a Black Mirror of kind of like if one-offs with the various ones that don't merit their own series but merit a kind of one-off 90 minutes showcase.
So I had
one idea though, which is a spin-off, and it's a. It's perhaps a slightly. It's not strictly a spin-off insofar as it doesn't take. It still takes James Bond as the main character, but taking James Bond from a point of the end of Spectre, where he decides to drive off. But then potentially a few things happen, and down the line he maybe descends into alcoholism, and then you cross. This is where it gets fun. You cross Bond with Nordic Noir and the idea of Elementary by basically having a recovering alcoholic James Bond relocated to a Nordic Noir somehow in one of the Scandinavian countries, who as an episodic spy series every week has to solve something as a consulting spy for the Nordic area.
A consulting spy, I love this idea.
Now, come off it, would you not? So just as how Elementary is a wonderfully, it has level of depth, but also wonderful froth on the Holmes and Watson.
Not Sweden, Finland. It has to be Finland. It has to share a border with Russia.
Yes.
A big raw border in Russia, and he has to live on a town that is actually 30% in Russia. So he ends up doing a bit of work for the Russians, and he has to pretend that he's still a spy. I love this idea.
That's a great idea. That's arguably the best idea.
Yeah.
I might edit this out and then we'll keep it for ourselves. We're millionaires. You'll never hear this.
Okay, well, now that we've exhausted ourselves of ideas, though, now let's come up with more ideas that are rubbish. Let's come up with the worst ideas for spin-offs.
Well, I think
spin-offs.
My Plenty O'Toole idea comes to mind.
I have a worst idea.
You have a worst idea. Come on, then.
So, you can see where I'm going with this one very quickly. For your eyes only, ice skating.
Ice skating.
Baby. Oh.
Damn it. I was going to say that.
Really? No!
Yeah. Oh.
It's a dreadful... You basically... And it's a series that follows her and Roger Moore's romance. And it's kind of like a kind of will-they-won't-they continual sitcom.
Yeah. Throughout. Unfortunately, the last episode is when he suddenly realises that Babysitter is actually his daughter.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh,
that's a dreadful, dreadful thought.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty inappropriate.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you've got us beat. There's no coming back.
I don't think we can go lower than that. No. Oh, come on. Let's go lower than that.
I don't think you can get much lower than BB.
Yeah.
In the Bond franchise. Yeah.
I mean, BB's pretty unsafe anyway.
Yeah, the whole area is entirely unsafe. I feel as if I'm committing a crime simply by talking about it. I feel as if I should be, you know, surrendering myself to
we haven't gone down the road of Fiona Fullerton's character in View to a Kill.
Yeah,
no,
you're right, we haven't.
Yeah.
But that's because these are
precious
memories.
We can go down that avenue any day,
can't
we?
Yeah, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to burden the listeners with any, you know, pathetic fantasies that I made still after all.
Or Agent Triple X.
Yeah.
So I think we tend to be going down the sort of idea of like 80s, 90s, sort of like that sort of shift in the power of the Cold War. Because I think it's a very rich theme to mine, and if you're going to go for a period piece, you either go back to the really early stuff, you go back to the Fleming era, 50s, post-war era, or you go to that 80s era, which is interesting because things are suddenly changing and you're suddenly questioning what's actually going on. So... Or you come straight to the future. Sorry, Gary. Yeah.
I was also going to say, I think actually, you might say that we can't get lower than BB, but I think we actually did touch on possibly the worst idea for spin-off earlier on the podcast. Pierce Brosnan's side cannon.
And his mighty side cannon. Yes.
Basically, just remaking the Kama Sutra with Pierce Brosnan's face in the world is not enough. I mean, now there's not a worse idea pitched than that. I would really don't want to hear.
Basically,
it.
Like what when he's got the thing around his neck, gurning. Yeah.
Well, I just to maybe bring things back again. I mean, you know, I've always thought that Max Zorin was an excellent villain in The View to a Kill, and possibly
Max and Mayday. The Max and Mayday adventures.
Yeah.
I think that definitely has potential, especially I'm all for bringing back airships. There's not enough airships in films or TV these days, and having his just headquarters on a floating airship to me is that you just really have to say those words to me. I'm like, right, fine, where do I sign? Where how much money do you need to create this airship?
Yeah.
Because
and,
I can get on board.
Octopussy as well, great character. Definite possibilities. Yeah. Well, and also an entire treatment about Francisco Scaramanga might be worth
it. Well, I'll tell you what, how about we come up with we just name three characters and we come up with a one-off episode or film.
So this
or
is kind
short
of like,
film
like the quick fire round. If I fire out of some characters to you, you have to very quickly. I like this. This is kind of like just a minute, but for Bond,
cool.
Bond's character.
Yeah. No, I think this is great.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I haven't a clue.
Yes, more
in,
like that.
In all manner of ways.
And so Christastos.
Ah, Christastos. Okay. Well, the pistachio ring. I would begin with pistachio and work from there.
Graham. Underwater. It's got to be like scuba diving or something like that. Someone's got to be looking for something underwater. Now, yeah, you've got to put more characters. other characters, come on, let's check them in.
Yeah, I would tell the story of how the hell they built that fucking monastery.
Okay,
that's what I do.
Next one I'll chuck out. Klaus Hergesheimer.
Ah, now, I have the answer to this. That's not a film, that's a tribute band. Klaus Hergesheimer and the G-Section is a James Bond tribute band. It just hasn't happened yet.
Lots of wah-wah guitars.
May I just emphasise the word yet?
Terry has been existing for the last 12 years as Klaus Hergesheimer on very many James Bond and message boards.
This is true, isn't it? It's all true.
You're not the person who's created the Klaus Hergesheimer Twitter account, are you?
Well, the worst thing is that Klaus Hergesheimer argues with Gumbold on many forums, is Terry.
Indeed. Well, this podcast is based in Gabriel Gumbold's office. Have you not read the Twitter bio? I tell you what, though, a sitcom. A Gabruder.
The Old Couple.
Sitcom. That'll be alright.
Yeah. Gabruder Gumbold.
And his sack of unsafe porn.
So every week it's him trying to hide his stash of office porn away from his.
My porn!
Oh, it's got legs.
Yeah.
I like this idea.
Carry on, guys.
Oh my god, I
can imagine Lou Grade in the '70s like sucking on his cigar going, I like this idea.
we're gonna go with it.
Okay, right, I'm going to throw one more out there to finish off.
Okay.
I'll go to Graham first. Christmas Jones.
Christmas Jones. Right. God, Jesus Christ. Right, this is actually a very sophisticated piece set in the late 1930s, just before James Bond joins up to the Navy. Christmas Jones is there as an agent of the League of Nations, and I'm just coming up with words now.
You're basically just reciting Hayley Atwell's character from.
Shut up right now. Hayley Atwell. I don't go just constantly think of Hayley Atwell. Okay.
Hayley Atwell.
Yeah. Exactly. See, and this is what spin-offs are all about. You see, because spin-offs have allowed Hayley Atwell to like.
It's allowed us to arrive at Hayley Atwell.
Exactly.
And possibly end with Hayley Atwell.
And yeah. I think this is a very good place to end on that. Thus ends the quickfire round. I'm probably giving that one to Terry on points.
Yeah, why not?
Yes, indeed.
Just on the basis that Graham pitched me something that already exists.
But his heart was in the right place.
His heart was definitely in the right
place. My heart was as well.
In addition to the rest of it.
I think this is actually probably the most appropriate podcast we've ever had. Graham's leaping around.
Well, no, it's just what you're saying. Like, what about the belly dancer in Man with the Golden Gun?
I've lost my child.
Not from her eyes, then.
Spent 13 episodes while she finds her child.
Yes. Sorry, Gary.
Sorry, Gary. That's quite all right. I was going to say, we've got through this podcast as well, and quite thankfully nobody's mentioned a spin-off with Sergeant Pepper from the various Bond
eras. Oh, yes. J.W. Pepper series.
I did have J.W. Pepper in my list.
But we'll gloss over that. But I think this is actually one podcast where, more than any other podcast we've done, where it's actually, I would deeply encourage listeners to actually come in.
Further Adventures of J.W. Pepper. It's there. It's written there. Look, you don't believe me.
Listeners, he has actually. So Terry has shown me a little black book with just a title underlined saying, The Further Adventures of J.W.
Pepper. Shall I read it out?
Go on.
I've got Dr. No, Honey and Felix. I've got Karen Bay's Wartime Adventures. I've got Pussy Galore's Firing and Circus for Goldfinger, which we never mentioned.
We don't know. Exactly. It's too easy. It's too easy. We don't go that easy.
How He Got His Eye, brackets patch. I got my Plenty O'Toole thing, which actually didn't go down as well as I thought it might do. I did have Columbo for Fury's Only. But I thought also Melina might be an interesting story as well, and then that I got as far as that. And that was sadly.
Go ahead with your roundup.
No, that was quite fun. I was into the outro, I was into the closing credits there, and it's a bit like Austin Powers or even a Will Ferrell film where they just put in the outtakes at the end of it, and everybody goes, "Well, they must have had a fantastic time on that." I'll just get my jazz flute out at this stage because I wasn't really prepared.
Jazz flute away.
I'm letting Terry do the sound editing at this stage. But dear listeners, if you have any kind of suggestion for a Bond spin-off,
James Bond meets Flash Gordon.
We certainly come up with the best ideas in the first half hour, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
The amount of beer drunk may be coincidental.
Yes.
James Bond meets Jaws. No, doesn't quite.
But James Bond meets Jaws. What? Which Jaws?
What the shark called?
Shark Jaws. Yes.
But James Bond meets Quint from Jaws.
Yes.
James Bond goes on a
fishing
style hunt
Just imagine Quint sitting there like on the orca, so like showing off their skull, comparing his skulls, and then all of a sudden something like Quint goes, "I'll get the red wine out." And Bond goes, "Oh, right, okay, fine."
You know what Bond was? And at that point, you know he's a wrong one.
End this podcast now. End it now.
Thank you. Listeners, please send us in. Tweet us at OddJobPod with your suggestions for 140 character elevator pitch for a Bond spin-off. We'd love to hear them. Genuinely, we would. They can't be any worse than anything that's been discussed on this podcast tonight. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
I bet they can.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Turn that off. Press the off button now. Press it.